Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Day by day!
Day by day!
We get better and better!
We get better
and better! We get
BB! We get
BB! Boom! BB!
Boom!
BB!
Hail Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Great to have you in on a Tuesday. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, producing, engineering, co-hosting, loaded show today. We'll catch up with Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com and Magazine. The all-important college football playoff rankings tonight. Some weeks you've rolled your eyes at it. It's gotten pretty funky, pretty interesting, and dare I say must-see TV. They really wanted to mess with people. They could have made us all hold our breath and then just tune in Sunday. Sorry, Sunday Night Football. I'm sure it's a better matchup than some past weeks. But needless to say, you'll have kind of a tone-setting ranking only to have it reshuffled this weekend after conference championship weekend. Mitch Sherman in 15 minutes, Lars Anderson, Bleacher Report. Lars very involved with the upcoming Showtime documentary on Lawrence Phillips. Lars, a co-writer and executive producer on this project. We'll get Lars' thoughts on the upcoming LP documentary. We'll get Lars' thoughts on the Big Ten, the SEC, and some Nebraska. Kevin Suits, 1011 Sports. Get caught up with him. And you can join us, 466-3776, 466-3776. Toll free, 1-800-825-5865. Now, if there's excessive wheezing into the microphone, I'm not trying to be insensitive or disgruntled. I'm working through day two of this chest head cold TJ decided to hand out to everybody.
Yeah.
Are you proud of yourself?
Nope.
You're happy. You're feeling good.
Yeah, I'm feeling a lot better.
You got a needle today. I don't know if that was liquid amphetamine or if it was a flu shot. I'm not going to judge either way.
Yeah.
But, no, I got the, are you going to the doctor today, from the lovely wife. And I'm like, no, I'm going to try and battle through it. Going tomorrow.
Yeah. I try to avoid coming in here, but, you know.
No one can do what you do, man. That's put up with me, put up with Bird, and then also rock it like you do. So,
try.
No, you're all good. But, no, she's like, well, you kept me up all night coughing, so are you going to the doctor? Like, no, I'm going to do 2 days in a row of keeping you up all night coughing. American Reunion was on last night. I hadn't seen that in a while.
That's a good one.
As you try to go to sleep coughing, and the one dude stuck in high school, it was Stifler. I got a kick out of that because I hadn't seen it for quite a while. And, you know, Stifler's trying to be the high school dude, and they're all 28 or going on 30. No one's interested. An interesting article on the Iowa Rivals site. Tory Brecht is his name, and that's where we're going to start. Not to beat you over the head with Iowa, Nebraska too much, but it kind of comes into, you know, Nebraska moving forward, and you've had really tremendous riders locally, be it Sip or Chattel or McEwen or Vogel with Hale Varsity. You've had riders kind of point out what Wisconsin and Iowa do. And what do they do? Barry Alvarez has said it on our show before. In Iowa and in Wisconsin, we grow large people. It's not a knock. It's not being a smart aleck. It's not being insensitive. It's a fact. You grow large people in Wisconsin and in Iowa. Nebraska grows large people. The Midwest grows large people. And they grow large athletic people with good feet. And above all, rural work ethic. Okay? And you go back to winning championships in the 70s. Go back to winning championships in the 80s. Go back to winning championships in the 90s. National championships in the 90s and in the 70s. You had large rural people with great work ethic who loved kicking your butt for 3 hours on a Saturday. And I think you have part of that in the program now. You've got kids from Illinois. You got a kid from Vegas. You have walk-ons from Nebraska, kids from Kansas, and so on and so forth we go. You have that same element. But the one thing that Iowa has, and I think Nebraska's got to get back to, is the blue-collar mentality. And I don't think Nebraska doesn't have a blue-collar workman-like approach, because that's what I see with Kavanaugh. That's exactly what I see when it comes to, you know, rural work ethic in Perella. I think you have both coaches there that absolutely get that. But you're running into a difference in who you're recruiting. I was going after a two-star guy that's got a chip on his shoulder the size of Montana. Let's use Akram Wadley as an example. 2.5-star dude. He's not rural. He's from Chicago, but he's kind of a PO'd guy. No one wanted him. And he looked incredible. He looked great against Michigan, a team that we'll see if they're still in the hunt or not for a playoff spot. And he was great against Nebraska. But this rider with the Iowa Rivals, Tory Brecht, he's funny. It wasn't real nice to Nebraska, but it was kind of hilarious. Back to the American reunion and Stifler example. Nebraska's the stud athlete waiting for the past and has now become an alcoholic. Meanwhile, Iowa is the science club geek that married okay, has a good 401k, and just keeps kind of chopping the rock, just keeps working. And the blue-collar mentality is something that Nebraska is going to have to get back to and reinforce. And that's something that, as you go out for the 4- and 5-star wideouts, the 4- and 5-star quarterback, your heartbeat is going to be, A, what type of attitude you bring in on the lines of scrimmage. The guys want to mix it up. The guys want to get physical. The guys want to throw a punch. And B, what type of supporting cast can you sprinkle in? The most successful programs and seasons Nebraska's had have been great with a walk-on or two that's earned a scholarship, or they're small-town guys that earned scholarships or had scholarships. And then you sprinkle in some coastal talent, either east or west, or Texas talent, and you get a stud quarterback. I mean, the formula is there. I'm going to lose my voice here. Hang on.
Hey, it's all right.
Back at it. But Iowa's approach, the blue collar, go get who you can get, and don't be so egotistical, Nebraska. That hurts, and I think that's an oversimplification. I don't think Nebraska is wrong for thinking they're better than Iowa. I don't think it's an attempted. I don't think it's an attempted slight towards Iowa. It's just it's history versus kind of what have you done lately. And Iowa's like, move on, dude. And Nebraska's like, why don't you win something, dude?
Yeah, it's a little big brother versus little brother.
Right, and that's the one thing this guy nails here, though, is just the blue, how you get it done. I think Wisconsin's the carrot you're chasing. Iowa is a team that's at least beaten Wisconsin. In the last few years, Iowa's finished in the top 10 a handful of times, 4 or 5. Nebraska hasn't. That hurts to say. And it really hurts when you look at the last several games against Iowa. Now, what's Iowa's ceiling? What's a good year for Iowa is kind of the comeback if you're Nebraska.
Yeah.
8-4.
They were still 8-4.
Yeah, they may be 8-4. They may have got beat by North Dakota State. They kind of crushed you by 30. They beat Michigan. You know what flipped it around on them?
They have a signature win, that's for sure.
You know what flipped it around? And those, you can get those. I mean, Nebraska beat Michigan State last year.
Yeah. We just didn't have one this
year. What flipped it around last year, or this season for Iowa, was they got called out. They got called out after the Penn State loss this year. Penn State said they didn't want to be here. They didn't want to mess with us. Iowa heard about that, did something about it. Nebraska needs to hear about last Friday and take it with him to the bowl game. Now, we spent yesterday just kind of hammering home the 9-3, what's it mean? 9-3, what's it mean? And really, not a lot. You beat Minnesota. You beat Wyoming. That's okay when you look at their record. But overall, you beat nobody of substance, okay? And you got trounced in two of your three games. Let's flip it around and go the other way now about talking about 9-3 being an achievement. I'm not talking out of both sides of my mouth here. I'm giving the pro and the pro, not just the pro and the con here. The point is you won 9. You got a chance at a New Year's Day bowl. I mean, for sure, New Year's Day bowl. It's been a while since you've had one of those. It ain't Sugar Bowl or Cotton Bowl or Fiesta, but you'll take Outback because it's seen in a very positive light. And you'll have a pretty good name matchup with either Auburn or LSU or Florida. And let's look at 9-3. If you step back from your anger Friday, are you impressed with 9-3? And I ask it in this way. Considering the injury situation, Penn State was injured. They ended up 10-2 with a chance at 11-2. Iowa's dinged up. Well, they can finish 9-4. You've had some injuries on the offensive line and name a Big Ten school. The fact that Nebraska had a guy like Seathan Carter miss 3 games. The fact that Nebraska had wideouts like Westerkamp and Alonzo and Riley all missed 2 games because of injury. The fact that you had Tommy Armstrong not at 100% post, let's just call it like it is, post-Northwestern. And the fact that you did not have the same starting 5 on the offensive line post-Foster's injury. Really good write-up by Rich Kuypist on this. You didn't. So you were plugging and playing somebody at left guard. For a while it was Hahn. Sometimes it was Whitaker. And then you got Foster back. 2 dudes made all 12 starts, Utter and Gates. They were less than effective and hampered. Farmer missed a couple of games. Neville jacked his ankle against Oregon. And then you kind of had the Neville-Conrad rotation. Of the 11 projected starters, they missed an incredible amount of games. All of them. And I think if you're going to sneeze at 9-3, and I did some sneezing yesterday, you got to look at the 9-3 with those injuries and say, well, it could have been 5-7 all over again.
Yeah, I would say, though, for the most injured game, it seemed like going into the season, the Wisconsin game, they almost won that game. And there was a bevy amount of injuries going into that game, and they almost won that thing. But, I mean, there were a lot of injuries this year, no doubt. That offensive line was banged up. There was a lot of things they had to get
to. So when they were at their worst, they played at their best all year. Their peak performance was Wisconsin. And you can factor in a lot of things. A, they wanted it. They were confident in it. They wanted it for Sam because that's where he passed away. And they felt ready. Mm-hmm. And they came off a pretty good ball game against Indiana heading into it. One, they had to outlast somebody, make some tackles in open field, and be tough. It got them ready. So it's impressive. So as you sneeze at 9-3 or who the hell they beat, I think you got to step back and go, well, in a fair way, not championing them as some great team. They're an okay team. Mm-hmm. And there's some really good players on this okay team.
And a 4-win increase is quite a lot in a regular season.
You know, five, what? Five no, no, nine. It's, yeah, but I'm going to go back to what 6-7 was. 6-7 should have never happened.
Agreed.
5-7 was a freak show.
Mm-hmm.
In their worst year ever, it never should have happened. Ever. Again, going elitist here. Back to the Hawkeye Report article with Nebraska and their attitude, per his thought. But listen, on your worst day, and you had a lot of them in 15.
BYU, Illinois.
Doesn't matter. Yeah. Doesn't matter. You should never have done that. You should never have gone, 6-7.
Mm-hmm.
Should have never have come down to that. You're just better than that. And I think you think that with Nebraska over Iowa. You're just better than that because Iowa's bar is, well, let's go 8-4 and head to the Holiday Bowl. I don't think that's their mindset. But what they are great at is recognizing who they are and being blue collar. And I think a big time dose of blue collar in this program can help because you're going after some high profile dudes. You are at the skill spots. That'll be great. But to keep everyone grounded, you need the walk on. You need the blue collar big dude that's rural to kind of set the tone, attitude and effort wise. Off and running and coughing on a Tuesday. Mitch Sherman coming up. Lars Anderson on the way. Hail Varsity continues presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Want to be heard?
We know he's not. Let him finish.
Call 402-466-ESPN or text Hail to 88474 with your message. Chat with us on Twitter at Schmidt_radio and JMore44 and TJ_Henning.
Who wants to have some fun?
Now it's back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Great to have you back. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Lars Anderson, associate producer and co-writer of the Lawrence Phillips documentary coming up at 5 o'clock. Welcome in with ESPN.com and magazine, Mr. College Football, Mitch Sherman, at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Mitch, how we been? How you doing? How was the holiday weekend?
It treated me well. I'm still recovering, but on to the next thing. So, yeah, I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing okay. How excited are you for the rankings tonight? Do we have Mitch's crystal ball ready?
Well, I don't know how excited I am. How far does Michigan fall, I guess, is the question that the committee needs to answer. My suspicion is that it's not going to fall below the two Big Ten teams that you see in the championship game this week. So I think Michigan will be 5, and Wisconsin and Penn State in some order will be 6-7, and that'll all be ironed out this weekend. Obviously, the winner of that game is going to be the higher ranked of those two teams, so it doesn't really matter what order they're in, 6 or 7. Wisconsin was higher a week ago,
mm-hmm.
And I think the Big Ten championship would give that winner a boost over Michigan, although Michigan beat both of those teams, but still the conference championship is supposed to mean something, and you'd have the Big Ten champ and Michigan with 2 losses. So I think there's a chance for that Big Ten champion to get into the playoff, especially if it's Penn State, because Penn State has a win over Ohio State, the Big Ten team right now that seems to be a near lock, or I would say a lock to be in the semifinals. So much of the drama right now revolves around the Big Ten conference. And the only way we're going to have additional drama is if Washington or Clemson loses in their respective championship games on Saturday.
Say that happens. Do I need to be drug tested if I say, hey, how about 3 Big Ten teams?
Well, I don't think it's likely. I think the committee, while it says that it does not look at conference affiliation on the resumes of its contenders, would be hesitant to put 3 teams in from 1 league, even if it's the best league hands down in the country. I don't see that happening. It's not completely outside the realm of possibility. And in order to avoid it, if you have Colorado and Virginia Tech winning this weekend, you might have to have a team like Oklahoma or Colorado jump over a Big Ten team that didn't lose this weekend. In fact, I think you probably would. So you can't shut the door on that possibility. But I think the chance that we're going to be thrown into complete chaos mode is slim. Because, for one, Clemson is light years better than Virginia Tech, I surmise. And I don't think Washington's going to lose to Colorado.
So Chris and I were talking about that before the show, possibly three teams in the Big Ten getting in, or three teams from one conference getting in. When this whole college football playoff committee thing started, I just wanted to make sure that we had the top four teams regardless of conference. Isn't that what we should want if the Big Ten is deserving of three teams this year, if they're in the top four?
Yeah, and I don't think the Big Ten is deserving of three teams. I'll say that. I think if you have Penn State or Wisconsin win that game, and you're of the opinion that Michigan deserves to get in or the Big Ten champ has to get in, I don't think the Big Ten is that strong. It's the best conference in the country. And, you know, Ohio State, if you want to judge Ohio State as an independent, let's say you put the name Notre Dame in front of Ohio State's resume, you don't even think about it. Ohio State gets in. That team gets in. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that Ohio State has anything to worry about. It goes a little bit against some of the basic points of the committee about conference champions when Ohio State didn't even win its division, but Ohio State's 11-1 and lost a close game at Penn State, so the Buckeyes are in. I think that there is a case to be made if you're looking at three Big Ten teams and Clemson's out and Washington's out, there's a case to be made for the Big 12, which was dead in the water in September. But Oklahoma has rolled off 8 consecutive wins, and Oklahoma State has rolled off 7 consecutive wins, and Oklahoma State is an officiating gaffe away from being a one-loss team at this point. So the only scenario in which the Big 12, to me, gets consideration is if you're sitting there saying, all right, do we put three Big 10 teams in? And then I think the answer is no. You go with the winner of Bedlam down in Norman this weekend.
Mitch Sherman with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Mitch, one more thought on the playoff committee and the Big Ten. You've got a conference title, you have strength of schedule, you have head-to-head, you have common opponents. Those are your four criteria. When it comes to conference title, could the Big Ten trump its own rule because of who's out there? Meaning, say Wisconsin wins, and I really like Wisconsin. I think they're a dynamite football team. They're 11-2. They have zero bad losses. They have zero blowouts. That said, you have Michigan who beat them 14-7 in Ann Arbor head-to-head. And while Wisconsin's got the strength of schedule nod, body of work-wise over Michigan, you could argue that the Colorado win by Michigan's more impressive than the non-conference win by Wisconsin over LSU. So could the Big Ten keep their own conference champ out in favor of Michigan, who beat both Penn State and Wisconsin, and then, of course, you have Ohio State that's already in because of resume?
Yeah, I think it could happen, and that would be a tough decision if it comes down to that for the committee. And it may happen. I mean, because I do think there's a very good possibility or at least a reasonable possibility that you'll have two Big Ten teams in the semis. Mm-hmm. So if the fourth spot comes down to a Big Ten champ and it is Wisconsin or Michigan, I think they'll probably go with the conference champion. Although there are cases there are points to be made on Michigan's resume that are indisputable. This is just one of those years where you're not going to get every piece of criteria to line up. There are sometimes competing aspects in that criteria rundown. I think most years it will work out better than this, but the way this Big Ten season has played out, there are multiple scenarios this weekend where you could find the league, as you said, kind of in a state of confusion, where one scenario doesn't make sense because of this piece of criteria. What I'm saying is, it's very possible that not everything is going to line up, that no matter which way the committee goes, there's going to be a good argument to be made to go a different direction.
Mitch, let's talk Nebraska, Iowa. Your reaction to Friday?
Disappointing, very, very much not the way that Nebraska could have afforded for this season to end. I, for the first time this year, felt like Nebraska didn't have anything in the tank, didn't have the will to be able to punch back when it got hit in the jaw like Iowa did in the first half on Friday in Iowa City. And I'll even, you know, say that the Ohio State game, of course, you know, you see the score at 62-3. I gave Nebraska a bit of the benefit of the doubt on that one because of Tommy Armstrong's injury and Ohio State's significant talent edge. Neither of those things, well, Tommy Armstrong was hurt again, but in a traumatic injury where you saw your quarterback being carried off on a stretcher. So, you know, guys play hurt at this point of the year. I don't cut Nebraska slack because Armstrong was something less than 100%. At least it's certainly not enough slack to warrant a 30-point loss. So it calls into question, I think, how badly Nebraska wanted it. And that has not been a concern. In fact, that's been a plus with this team, was a plus with this team through 11 games. It seemed like a tough bunch that played together and always had an answer, or almost always had an answer. See the Wisconsin game when things went awry, and that just was not there in Iowa City for whatever reason.
Mitch, got about 60 seconds left. What's coming up from you on ESPN.com?
Got an interesting story tomorrow morning after tonight's playoff rankings are unveiled, unless there's a big surprise. I sat down with some Oklahoma State players to talk about that week two debacle against Central Michigan, in part how the Cowboys were able to come back from that and pull off this 7-game winning streak and be ready to play for a Big 12 championship. And then also the what if game that's going on in all of their minds. If that game ends as it was supposed to end on September 10th, we would be having a lot more discussion right now about the potential of an 11-1 Oklahoma State team that would be in a good spot to make the playoff. There would be no talk, or very little talk, I think, of a third Big Ten team if Oklahoma State was primed to go out and win in Norman Saturday and be sitting there at 11-1. But the officials made a mistake, and the Cowboys are instead 9-2, going for 10-2.
30 seconds. Do you have your 4+1?
I think the 4 is pretty apparent. I've got Michigan as the +1 right now, and then obviously Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, and Washington in those 4 spots. So, you know, it's like the calm before the storm. Mm-hmm. All appears at ease on the open seas, and it could get pretty ugly on Saturday if some things happen in the Pac-12 and ACC.
It could get choppy. Mitch, always appreciate your time. Great insight. Thanks for a few minutes today.
All right, thanks, Chris.
Take care. Mitch Sherman with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine. So he's going conference champion, kind of chalk, and that's how you go. I don't think so. I don't think a Pac-12 championship, that's my debate. That's my question mark. That's what I need answered, is a Pac-12 title if the team that wins it is Washington. They beat Colorado. I'll give them that. Who else? Stanford, 9-3, okay. I just think Pac-12 is not anywhere close to getting through the Big Ten and being a champion at 11-2. Just don't think so. We'll continue on. How about conspiracy theories? Get your tinfoil hats ready. We'll talk next on Hail Varsity.
Welcome back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show. Here's Chris and Jay.
Jaybird going to be back Thursday. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, hope you're doing all right. Thanks so much to Mitch Sherman. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Safe driving and demand your full attention. One of every 3 traffic fatalities in Nebraska alcohol-related. Many of those drivers involved buzzed while driving. Remember, you drink, you drive, you lose. A message from the Nebraska Office of Highway Safety. Lars Anderson, 25 minutes away. His thoughts on the upcoming Lawrence Phillips documentary on Showtime. Lars, a co-writer and associate producer on that. We get Lars' thoughts on the college football playoff. Kevin Suits, 10-11 Sports, get his take on Husker volleyball, Husker football, Husker basketball. Big game tomorrow night at Clemson. Big game this weekend against South Dakota. And one of my favorite bald dudes ever, Coach Craig Smith, going to be with us Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Excited to have him back on. I love Craig Smith. Awesome guy. Hope he does well. Incredibly well in South Dakota. So that is tremendous. Okay. Well, Harbaugh has been leading the way this fall. As it was the summer of Harbaugh, it's turned into the fall of Harbaugh. And he's had really an incredible season. Michigan's 10-2. They were up 10-0 at Iowa. Lost. They were up 17-7. Lost in overtime to Ohio State. So they're a blink away from being undefeated. Credit Iowa, made a play by Jahleel Johnson, swung momentum. Hawkeyes found a way, and Wadley at 100.5 on the ground, maybe a little more. Against Ohio State, they were just beating the crap out of that run game that Ohio State wanted to do. And then the aerial assault by Barrett was non-existent. It took Curtis Samuel doing Curtis Samuel-type touches in the fourth quarter and overtime to win. And Michigan's defense, I think, is the for realest thing in college football, along with Alabama. Spate, the thing that makes me wonder about Michigan and whether or not they're deserving with two losses, the Colorado win looks great. I know Lufo, I'll get that right sometime soon, got hurt, got knocked out. Colorado was up 24-7 in that game. So they won that game, knocked the quarterback out. They outlasted Wisconsin, blasted Penn State, and lost by a point to Iowa at the buzzer. Lost in overtime to Ohio State. The resume's pretty good for Michigan. Michigan's schedule looked like garbage until Colorado got better. I think Colorado's more for real than Penn State. Penn State's gotten hot. While they're talented, they've gotten hot. Colorado's been through a pretty good little gauntlet of ranked teams.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see how they cap it off. But do you buy conspiracies? And we didn't get this audio in yesterday, and you've heard it 48 times, but make it 49. I love it.
That it wasn't a first down by that much. That it was not a first down. The officiating, I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today. That spot.
Yeah, that spot. And, I mean, bitterly in that spot are common themes you'll hear this segment.
That spot.
It was, I don't know, I thought he maybe got it by a half a nose hair.
Bitterly.
Yes, you are. And Harbaugh went full psycho. $10,000,
mm-hmm.
I think, is hilarious. This is your problem, child, Michigan. You deal with it. But here's a question that we need to explore. Credit the big lead with this. The conspiracy about the referees in Ohio State, Michigan. Does your mind ever go there? I don't care how old you are. Think of the worst officiated game you've seen. Does your mind ever go there that I'm not calling anything a fix? No. But there are some personal grudges, shall we say, held towards another human. And think about it, okay? There was some bad no calls against Michigan. Michigan urinated away 21 points in turnovers.
Mm.
Pick six, another interception, fumble at the two. Think of a game that comes to my mind, Nebraska-Missouri basketball. This is 94. And it was it was grit and bear time against Norm Stewart and Danny Mee and the gang. Got screwed at Missouri. Final regular season game. I think of the A&M game where the cameraman had a clear shot, and then where'd the cameraman go? I thought that was a little bit of Remember the Titans, where, son, you're never getting into the Hall of Fame unless you go along. That kind of came to mind. Yeah. There were some really bad calls against Nebraska in that A&M game in 2010.
Yeah, usually my mind doesn't go there because I trust that the people who put those people in those positions have done their homework.
Okay, well, can I tell you about homework?
Yes, please.
Because homework doesn't happen at the Schmidt house unless we're on top of Junior, okay? Now, conspiracy theory. The most pivotal play, the fourth down in overtime, Ohio State got the call. Here's what you need to know about the officials. This from the Big Lead. One, the lead official was Daniel Capron. Back in 2002, he was fired.
Jeez.
Fired by the Big Ten for poor officiating at Purdue, Wake Forest.
Big Jim, game.
Well, yeah. It's one thing to like get fired for fifth down. Yeah. Okay. It's another thing to hose up Purdue Wake Forest post Drew Brees. Yeah. When no one cares. I guess Orton was playing. Cut my mic.
Yeah, you got it.
Bitterly.
Oh, okay, here we go. During that time, Jim Delaney said, during the course of the game, these officials did not officiate well enough to meet Big Ten standards. Therefore, they will forfeit future officiating assignments. No one knows how Capron's been reinstated. How about Kevin Schwartzel? He's the back judge. He's an Ohio guy, has a business in Athens where Frankie Solich lives. 2006... He admits being an Ohio State fan. Even more impressive, he was not permitted to officiate the game of the century in 2006, Michigan-Ohio State. It's unclear why he was not permitted to officiate the first time these two guys touched gloves when they were 1-2 or 2-3. So he's already been told to go take a hike a decade ago. How about Bobby Sagers? He's the side judge. He's also an Ohio native. He's also recently been named to the Ohio High School Athletic Association Hall of Fame. Where is it located? Columbus. That one's a bit out there, right? Mm. But there was a late hit late in the ball game in front of him that he didn't call. So I'm just providing you factual information for the Big Lead about this conspiracy. Forget the fact that three of these dudes are from Ohio, and the fourth has been fired by the Big Ten. You can spend about 20 minutes with Harbaugh and say, I hate this guy. And then he ruined any credibility he had with these guys by what he said.
Bitterly.
Former black shirt, Jay Moore.
That thing is big, Jay. That thing looks hurt, Jay. Oh, man, pull back up, Jay. Jay, we could get some big money for that.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Great to have you back. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, Lars Anderson, Bleacher Report, and a producer and co-writer on the Lawrence Phillips Running for His Life Showtime documentary. Hear from Lars in 10 minutes. Kevin Suits coming up. So we spent time on Harbaugh, and it's hard to take him seriously when he just freaks out after the game. We laid out some conspiracy theory possibilities. But he came across as kind of a whiny jerk, although the clipboard flip and body slam of the headset was hilarious. I laughed out loud. I thought it was great. And that's better than kind of MFing the official's face, you know, 2 inches from his ear. There are ways to lose your cool on the sideline. Now, who's a bigger psycho? I ask this. Harbaugh kind of looks like it, And then you asked Nick Saban the wrong question. We'll ask Lars about this.
Two questions, if I could. One, Damian Harris said after the game that if anybody says Alabama could afford to win this game, they just hadn't played, I mean, lose this game, they haven't played sports. Do you expect, it's a big game, obviously, but do you also expect kind of competitive fire that you can't let, that won't let that mindset creep in?
Well, that's certainly not the mindset that we want. I mean, this is a big game for us. It's an opportunity to win the SEC championship.
Never.
Which to me is a very, very significant accomplishment. We hold that in very high esteem, having the ability to do that, having the opportunity to do it, having the ability to play for it, to think that, I mean, you all put everything about the playoffs, man. That's all you care about. You don't care about any bowl games. You don't care about any teams in the country that aren't in the playoffs. I don't know. If we don't win this game, maybe we throw a stink bomb out there. Maybe we don't get in the playoffs.
Not likely.
I don't know. You guys got all the answers to all that, but I don't. All I know is if we play and we play well, we control our own destiny in terms of what we do. So I'd really rather not have any more questions about, is it okay to lose this game? It's never okay to lose a game.
And I wanted to ask about Jalen. He's done.
You should have asked that first.
At least Nick didn't throw the full 20-ounce Coca-Cola at him.
Thankfully.
We need to edit that. It's never okay to lose a game. Jacob Padilla retweeted this. Non-conference records versus the Power Five. No doubt being gone over with a fine-tooth comb by the committee. You'll hear from Barry Alvarez when he was on with us about a month ago on the selection process. Against Power Fives, non-conference, Big Ten, 8-4. ACC, 13-8. Pac-12, 9-6. SEC is 6-8. Big 12, 4-6. I cannot take a 10-2 Oklahoma over an 11-2 Wisconsin. Can't do it. Can't do it. I can't take a 11-2 Colorado over an 11-2 Wisconsin. And I can't take either over Michigan. Give me Bama Clemson and Michigan Ohio State. Just rematch it last year and this year. You want it, you'd watch it.
Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Hey, Bob Dave! Hey, Bob Dave! We get better and better!
We get better and better!
We get beat, beat!
We get beat, beat!
Boom, beat, beat!
Boom, beat, beat!
Hail Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Back at it, hour two, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Let's get caught up with the Bleacher Reports. Lars Anderson at Lars Anderson 71, New York Times bestseller, and of course part of the SEC Network. Lars, happy post-Thanksgiving. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Good to be with you, buddy.
Hey, it's good to catch up with you. And before we talk about the Lawrence Phillips documentary, before we talk Bama, before we talk Big Ten and their rush to the postseason in the college football playoff versus the SEC, Nebraska, Iowa, a longtime Nebraska resident, you were. Have you gotten over Friday yet?
It was difficult to watch as someone who cares about Nebraska football, especially surrounded by Alabama fans. The lack of effort, I think, was probably the most disappointing thing. And you could tell early on, if you just looked at the line of scrimmage, Nebraska got blown off their – they weren't even on their heels. They were going backwards. I can't remember a time when I ever saw Nebraska defensive front and offensive front line get dominated the way they were. And that either is reveals a real problem in the whole system of what's going on there, or just the kids just didn't want to play. And it was pretty obvious that they wanted no part of Iowa after about 5 minutes of that game.
Yeah, Iowa extremely physical, and Nebraska will regroup likely for the Outback Bowl against maybe a Florida or an LSU that you know a lot about both programs. Lars, coming up December 16th on Showtime, the Lawrence Phillips documentary, Running for His Life. You're a co-writer, you're associate producer. You've had an immense amount of creative control in this project. And can you describe in a word or two what folks will see? We'll get further into it, obviously, but what comes to your mind with this documentary, with this project you worked so hard on?
Well, we document all of Lawrence's problems, of course, but we want to dig deeper and address the why. Why did Lawrence act the way he did? And to do that, we investigated his background, his childhood, where he grew up, the group homes that he was in, the state facilities he was in, and try then to extrapolate from what happened there why he acted the way he did whenever he was put in stressful situations, especially with women. And it is I think on multiple levels, it's very powerful. I'm proud of the final result. We had a lot of heavy hitters working on this. Ross Greenberg, who used to be the head of HBO Sports, who's the executive producer, won multiple Emmys. Armin Katayan from 60 Minutes is a co-writer with me on it. And Al Briganti, who is the former executive producer of a longtime show on CBS. So I think we brought a lot of different perspectives to the piece. And I was there mainly as someone who was with Lawrence kind of through the last 20 years of his life. I wrote about him. First cover story of mine at Sports Illustrated was on Lawrence when he was at Nebraska. I wrote about him in my second book when he was in NFL Europe. And then I wrote two long pieces on Lawrence for Bleacher Report in the last couple of years. So, they leaned on me for contacts, writing, and where we should go for our reporting. And we spent a lot of time out in Los Angeles. I interviewed Dick Vermeil for a couple hours at his home outside of Philadelphia. I interviewed Nick Saban on camera for about 20 minutes in Tuscaloosa. And so, we really just blanketed the country and talked to Jimmy Johnson, Steve Young, all sorts of former teammates. We found ex-girlfriends of Lawrence's. We got one of his a woman who still claims that she's in love with Lawrence, and it was her testimony that put him in jail for 20 some years. So it's a complicated story, and we try to unravel it the best we can in 90 minutes.
Lars Anderson with us, senior writer, Bleacher Report, course instructor of journalism in Alabama, SEC Network, New York Times bestselling author, multiple times over at Lars Anderson 71, co-writer and associate producer of the Lawrence Phillips documentary, Running for His Life on Showtime. That'll air December 16th. Lars, what were you expecting going into this? You had history, you have background with Lawrence, but you worked with some really talented people on this project. What were you able to communicate to them, and what were how did the workflow and the process working together on this documentary go for you with it? So the story's told to your liking, to their liking, the teamwork aspect.
Yeah, I learned a lot. I'm a writer, a magazine writer and book writer, and so this is a whole new genre for me. And so I learned just sort of how to put together a documentary. And what I wanted to always keep our eye on was the question of why. Not so much what, because it's been well documented, but why. And I think we really got to the core of that. And we also wanted to investigate the final hours, the final day of Lawrence's life. And we did that to the best of our ability, and we lay out everything we found, and we let people draw their own conclusions. Hopefully we won't get sued. But, with Lawrence, everything is complicated, and nothing is as it seems, And I was surprised that so many of people who claimed that that they were Lawrence's friend, lifelong guys, and I'm not going to give you names, but they wouldn't come on camera, and they wouldn't talk about Lawrence. They wouldn't they wouldn't be the voice that I thought Lawrence needed to have in this documentary. And that was really surprising to me and disappointing, frankly, because I've known a lot of these people for a long time, and they wouldn't step up. But other than that, you know, I was pleasantly surprised by the honesty of the people that we did get. And I think we, even Nebraska fans, will learn a lot about Lawrence. Not all good. But I think it's an important documentary because, as Tom Osborne says in the film, that there are thousands, literally thousands of Lawrence Phillips out there, and they need to be helped at a very young age. And if I could distill what the core issue was with Lawrence, is that he wasn't loved as a kid. Mm-hmm. That's it, that simple. He was not loved as a child, and because of that, it caused so many problems. And I'm glad that we were able to examine those problems. And those have nothing to do with Lawrence's physical ability. But maybe this can be the ultimate legacy of Lawrence, is that his life is going to bring some good, because I think this film is going to open a lot of eyes about how this country treats its forgotten children.
Coach Osborne's dedicated his life to mentoring youth with teammates. Coach Osborne and Dick Vermeil both, is it fair to say, still kind of beat themselves up that things ended how they did for Lawrence? Because I know, just covering Nebraska and being around folks who know Coach Vermeil, I mean, those guys really gave everything they could, didn't they, to try and straighten him out?
Yeah, I mean, Coach Vermeil told me that the biggest regret he has as a coach is cutting Lawrence. You know, he was in his first year at St. Louis. Lawrence was in his second year, and Coach Vermeil just had a pretty quick trigger with Lawrence, and he was trying to set an example. And in retrospect, he wishes he hadn't done that, because that was really kind of what set Lawrence on this spiraling trajectory downward. And I don't think. You know, I don't think Coach Vermeil did the wrong thing. It was Coach Vermeil working the back scene of working the phones, getting Lawrence a chance at Miami, then later getting him a chance at San Francisco. That was all due to Coach Vermeil, and I think the guilt that he had for casting Lawrence aside. And you know, Vermeil had some really nice things and nice experiences with Lawrence. But then there was just these two sides of Lawrence, and as you'll see in the film, you know, you're just left shaking your head. It's like you just want to tell Lawrence, "Come on, you know, get it together here." But he just, for a variety of reasons, was unable to.
Lars Anderson, few minutes with us, Hail Varsity Radio, a Bleacher Report senior writer, but co-writer of the documentary Running for His Life, Lawrence Phillips. It'll be on Showtime the 16th of December, also associate producer. Now, folks will no doubt try and check this out on Showtime. Plans to get it picked up by Netflix or streaming services? Is there other ways to see this?
You know, I put the trailer on my Twitter feed yesterday, sure. And I got that exact question about 200 times yesterday. And unfortunately, I don't have an answer to that yet. Uh-huh. But I will look into that. I'll talk to Ross, the executive producer, and see what the plan is, because I know there are people out there that don't get Showtime and they want to see it. And I have to assume that there's got to be some way that they can be able to view it.
Lars, not to give all of this away, but I guess what was the most chilling part of an interview you did? You've talked to Jimmy Johnson, you talked to Coach Osborne, you talked to Dick Vermeil, you talked to Nick Saban. There's teammates you talked to. Is there one nugget that you still kind of think about on a day-to-day basis from this documentary?
Well, the last day of Lawrence's life sticks out to me, and we have someone who is with Lawrence after the preliminary hearing in which the judge ruled to move forward on with death penalty charges, and what Lawrence was dealing with sort of internally right after that in his demeanor. And also how he was treated by a certain prison guard that was viewed by someone else is extremely troubling.
Lars Anderson with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Lars, college football playoff tonight. You'll have the latest rankings by the selection committee. I say three Big Ten teams in the postseason, one SEC team. You say what? You react how?
I think you are smoking some good stuff there, Chris. I think there's a chance that there'll be two Big Ten teams, just a chance. I don't even think it's a likelihood, but I think there's a chance. But right now, I think Clemson, I think Alabama, I think Washington, and I think Ohio State. That would be my four right now.
Okay, so I'm going to push you here for a second. Do you think Washington would beat Michigan head-to-head?
I do not, but I think Washington will go on and win their conference championship, and that will trump what, you know, conjecture can say.
Are you impressed with Penn State? Are you impressed with Wisconsin's arguments?
Well, I am. Penn State is, as we were discussing earlier, they're a hot team. You're right. And I think Wisconsin would have a more compelling argument if they win the conference championship. But there's just so much speculation. I almost wish the committee wouldn't release their rankings until, you know, after. I kind of wish they wouldn't do this at all, because it's like we're forced to talk about it every single week. But I do think for the first time you will probably have you're right. There's a good shot that there'll be two teams from the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. But I think three would really be a stretch.
Well, you're going to have the Pac-12 and the ACC freaking out. I mean, Bama has been great. Nick Saban went nuts yesterday with a question by the media about is it okay to lose. Next time you talk to your buddy Nick, ask him if he's going to rest his lineup this weekend. See what he says. I'm joking, of course, but
I think there was like a little pool, or they were tossing the hat around among the reporters there of who was going to draw the short straw or draw the name to actually ask the question, because they knew that it was going to set Nick off, that it was going to be an explosion, and they were all just sort of sitting back there giggling. So look, that's sort of a dog and pony show in his press conference there, and everybody knows their role. They know what's coming, and so, look, that was not a surprise that it set Nick off.
Last shot here, Lars. You have a story coming out on Jalen Hurts, long form with Bleacher Report. Give us a little preview.
Yeah, I traveled to Jalen's hometown of Channelview, Texas, and spent time with a lot of people that he grew up with. And, you know, for someone who is on the short list of Heisman Trophy contenders, someone who is the freshman starting quarterback for the first time in 32 years at Alabama, he's got a chance to become the first true freshman to lead his team to a national title since Jamel Holloway in 1985. Nobody knows anything about him, and that's because Nick Saban doesn't allow true freshmen to speak to the media, and he keeps them in seclusion. And so this story just tries to answer the one question of who is Jalen Hurts.
Can't wait to read it. Lars Anderson, senior writer, Bleacher Report, SEC Network, 20-year contributor to SI, obviously New York Times best-selling author, and big-time player with Lawrence Phillips' documentary Running for His Life on Showtime, December 16th, co-writer and associate producer. Lars, we'll catch up again. Be good. Thanks for a few minutes.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
Love getting caught up with Lars Anderson chilling. That documentary on Lawrence Phillips, Running for His Life, extensive work by Lars Anderson with that. Coming up, your chance at the Holiday Hail Mary, your chance at exclusive premium online subscription to HailVarsity.com. We'll give those away. Kevin Suits next.
Forget to catch any segment of the show?
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Find the podcast of the show on HailVarsity.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
All right, all right, all right.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Jay Bird will be back on Thursday. Big thanks to Lars Anderson. Can't wait to see his work on the Lawrence Phillips documentary as a co-writer. Creative control, and yes, associate producer. Welcome in with 1011 Sports, tremendous talent, Kevin Suits. Suitsy, how we doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Doing okay. Doing all right. Big night tonight with college football, the playoff selection committee, the second-to-last rankings revealed, bowl trips abound Sunday, and who's in the playoff? What's most important to you? Conference title, strength of schedule, head-to-head, common opponent. Those are the four criteria. We're going to call it the Suits criteria. You re-rank them.
I think overall record, number one for me, I put a lot of value in just winning games, regardless who they're against. I like to see a good, not to say that I'm going to throw Western Michigan way up there, but I do like to see, record. Number one, I'd go head-to-head. Number two, ranking, I'd probably put ahead of both of, or below both of those. What's the fourth part?
Yeah,
I'm just going to stop at three. That's good for me.
Okay.
Show me a good record. Show me you won important games, and then let's go with what the computers say last.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you have some common opponents, and then did you win your conference? And I think Washington's a dynamite football team. I don't think the Pac-12's very good. I got to see Michigan in front of a Pac-12 champ. I got to see Michigan in front of a Big 12 champ. And I need to see Michigan in front of either Wisconsin or Penn State since they beat them head-to-head. Does that happen?
Oh, I think if you throw that whole the Michigan card out there, I got to see Michigan ahead of. I think Wisconsin's right there next to them, honestly. Like, for me, just because you look at Wisconsin's losses
to Michigan,
they have two. Mm-hmm. They lost to Michigan, so I mean they're just smidge below Michigan. But they played Ohio State to overtime.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan played Ohio State to double overtime. I see those as 1A. Well, let's not say one because we're not going to go Alabama territory. But
B
2A, 2B, 2C. Honestly, like for me, and maybe it's the fact that. You know, we follow Big Ten so closely around here. I can't give a fair assessment to Washington. I'll be honest, I haven't seen enough of them to know the entire body of work. I've watched them in spurts. Yes, they're impressive. Same goes for Clemson. I think they're in the discussion, but I really don't see much difference between Washington and Clemson in the limited that I've seen of them. Much to separate them from Wisconsin. But yes, I'd say Ohio State, Michigan, if that's your original question, yes, I think they're shoulder to shoulder.
Here's the other part, and I'll get off of this and we'll get into Nebraska here, but more impressive win, Michigan over Colorado or Wisconsin over LSU?
I'm going to say Wisconsin over LSU.
Really?
I am, because at that time, we didn't know all the baggage that was going to come with LSU. And I think LSU's season could have gone differently had they won that game. Okay. And it was early in the year.
Second game of the year. First game of the year.
So Chris and I were talking earlier about possibly the Big Ten getting three teams in. And before this whole playoff committee thing started, I just wanted them to make sure they got the four teams that are best in the country that year in, regardless of conference. Do you ever think the committee would be hesitant to put three teams in from one conference?
TJ, that's a great question. I would say yes, because, man, there's going to be a lot of backlash, a lot of blowback. And it's really hard for people outside of conference geographics to understand the value of other conferences, if that makes sense. And not that I'm going to equate college football to college volleyball, but I think that was one of the great rewarding things about the NCAA volleyball tournament when that bracket got released on Sunday, was the fact that they went Big Ten 1, 2, and 3 overall seeds. And they did it right. I don't think there's any disputing that. I think there's more room to dispute college football because it is more national. It's more public. People see more of it. But I think what people see happens to be what's in front of their face, and that goes to geographically where they're at or what their interests lie in terms of conference affiliation. I think that there could be a ton of heat on the playoff committee from the Pac-12 if the Big Ten takes three of the four spots. And I think the same could be said from ACC territory. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I think that's the one thing that would maybe make the committee say, whoa, 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 we can't do this.
Well, you have Clemson, and if they win it, it's moot because Clemson will get in. They've been really talented. They've got a really good strength of schedule. They've got a good resume. Pitt's not an awful team. The home loss is a head scratcher. Iowa's really turned their season around, so that loss looks better for Michigan. That win for Penn State over Iowa looks really impressive. Let's talk Nebraska now in 9-3, Suitsi. How do you think Nebraska responds long term from Friday's loss? Is that a loss Coach Riley's going to look at and says, A, can't happen again in that fashion, B, we got to get tougher? Do you think he goes to work after that loss?
Absolutely. I think that loss, more importantly from a fan perspective, I think that might overshadow the 9 wins and the turnaround.
Yeah,
it's fresh right now, but you know, you look at some of Bo Pelini's seasons where he won 9 games, 10 games. What ultimately do you remember about some of those seasons? Do you remember beating a ho-hum Iowa State team?
No, you remember getting crushed.
You remember the losses where you wanted to put your head in the sand. You remember getting waxed in Norman. You remember getting smashed in some of those other games. You know, like when they had the national stage, that's what you remember about those seasons. And I fear that that might be what happens with Nebraska. But I think you give Mike Riley the benefit of the doubt here that, as you use Schmitty, he goes back to work. And he's already made one step of doing that by taking immediate action and firing Bruce Reed. So I think that that one hit Coach Riley hard. And I think that that's one where he could sit himself in a room and say, we've got to take all steps necessary to make sure that that does not happen again. I think the previous staff, sometimes to a fault, was too loyal. That it was a, we are not going to let that happen again. And by we, they kind of created their own problem. But I think Mike Riley right now says, who knows how long he's going to coach, but he knows right now the lifespan might be shorter just naturally based on his football tenure and his age. That he might not look at this as a 15-year deal. He might say, 5 years, I want to win a Big Ten championship. And we've got to make a giant step forward right now because we can't let a 30-point loss to a border school happen again.
Looking back at that Wisconsin game, that was such a pivotal game for the Huskers going into that one. They come out with the loss. Even if they got the win, do you think the season would have been differently, or do you think maybe they were just kind of spent with the injuries, the fatigue, and Sam and everything that season?
Good question. Well, if they end up winning at Wisconsin, are we going to say that they still lose to Iowa at the end?
I don't think so.
I mean, because you change the dynamic of the whole season if you win, because you know, you're not playing from the, well, if Wisconsin lose card for the remainder of the conference season. You're playing from the driver's seat. And when you're in the driver's seat, sometimes you hammer the accelerator and you say, we control all of this, but we're going to take it. So I think, you know, let's say they still lose to Ohio State. Sure. They're still in the lead in the division. And now you are pressing through to Indianapolis. So I don't know if Iowa happens the way that it did if they come out of Wisconsin. And you think back to that Wisconsin game, my oh my, there was so... Remember when overtime happened?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got the gift of getting the ball second in overtime. They got the gift of Wisconsin. they didn't get the 7 out of it. They got 6. That game was on the platter. So I think that's what really just... I don't think we knew it at the moment, but those 5 minutes of real time, not clock football clock time, those 5 minutes might have changed the entire dynamic of the season when 2016 is all said and done.
Kevin Suits, 10-11 Sports with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Kevin, about 90 seconds. Tell us about what's coming up volleyball coverage-wise as the NCAA tournament gets rolling with you guys.
Well, we're going to sit down with Brianna Holman. Just a tremendous story. This is a girl that has always played volleyball at a really high level, and she didn't get to play last year. She watched the championship from the sidelines, not even in uniform, from the sidelines. So you talk about motivation, and she knew that that position was going to open up middle blocker for her, and she has just made a seamless transition. And she was a big part of last year's championship run because she was on the scout team. So we're going to profile her throughout this season, throughout this week, excuse me, and then we're going to get you all geared up for the tournament. And, you know, I really like this. You know, as much as we would love to be covering a football team getting ready for a conference championship, this volleyball program, which is so extremely good, getting to play at home and getting to really shine the light on them over the next 3-4 days and then into next week, should they advance, which we assume that they will in regionals. It's going to be fun to hitch the wagon to John Cook and the Huskers, because this team is special. And, guys, honestly, when they waxed Penn State a couple weeks ago at the Devaney Center, three-set sweep, and it was not close, that was some of the highest-level volleyball I've seen in a long, long time.
Okay, about 30 seconds here. What did you think of the Nebraska basketball men's team out in California and the John Wynn legacy?
I wish they could have gotten two wins out of it instead of one, but extremely encouraged. The way they played UCLA, high offensive UCLA team, they played UCLA tougher than anybody has this year. So, you know, the two losses, you wish it would be one at this point in the season, but I was extremely encouraged, and I think Glenn Watson, if nothing else, Glenn Watson showed to me and probably a lot of other Husker fans that this guy has an extremely bright basketball future ahead of him.
Kevin Suits, 1011 Sports, at Kevin Suits on Twitter. Kevin, we'll catch up next week, man. Thanks for the time. Appreciate your knowledge.
Thank you, guys. Good discussion.
All right, bud. Take care. Kevin Suits, he's awesome. Good dude. Great to talk sports with. Great to maybe have a beer with is some friends you don't know yet. But you meet new people at Zipline, Zipline Brewing Company. And Zipline has just done so many important things when it comes to record sales and the brewing they started in Lincoln. But the achievements include gold medal winning Copper Alt, nationally recognized IPA, 40 different beers. So a beer for your taste. And we want you to check out Zipline Brewing Company and Zipline in their tap rooms. Two options for you. In Lincoln, Westo, the original tap room, and you got to get to the German Beer Hall. It's modern. It's comfortable. It's a lot of fun. 56th and Pine Lake. Get to Zipline. 24 on tap there and the neighborhood community bar. And Zipline's available for you in Central and in Western and Northeast and in Southeast Nebraska. It's available on draft and in six packs across the state. Check out your local grocery store or bottle shop. And if you're coming this way for the holidays, come see us at Zipline, Zipline Brewing, and find out that new German Beer Hall, 56th and Pine Lake. Zipline, brewed in Nebraska, brewed in Lincoln, poured for all of Nebraska.
Subscribe to Hail Varsity Magazine. Call 1-855-3-HUSKER or go to hailvarsity.com/subscribe.
That's amazing!
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Big thanks to Kevin Suits, Lars Anderson this hour, Mitch Sherman first hour. College football playoff selection committee is it at 7 Central? Yeah, we're going to go with 7 Central. Back in the day, they'd always tell me Dukes of Hazzard was on 7 Central, 6 Mountain, or 8-7 Central. It always made me fret. Okay, tomorrow on the program, Jake Milheisen, standout Husker. His thoughts as we get ready for Nebraska-Clemson. Also on the program, Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider, College Game Day, and he's part of this playoff selection committee evaluation. He's not on the committee, obviously, but he's Mr. BCS, so he's the closest thing to an inside guy as you have. So he'll be joining us, excited about that. Your chance coming up here with HailVarsity.com and that premium subscription. We'll tell you about that. Lots of recruiting news on HailVarsity.com as Nebraska coaches are everywhere. One of the coaches we had on not long ago, dare I say recently, Barry Alvarez was with this Nebraska-Wisconsin week. Barry Alvarez being the prophet that only Barry Alvarez can be. Coach, I'll get you out of here on this. College football selection committee, a big part of it, your role, November 1st, the first ratings come out. Has this been a fun year to evaluate college football for you?
Well, every year is fun because it's fun for me because I sit there, you're watching, I watch everything I can on college football. And from the first week on, people were talking about who's going to be in the Final Four. You know, it's actually funny for me. I've just read something today where at this point a year ago, just a few teams, there were only like one or two teams ranked in the top 8 or 10 that were in the Final Four.
Okay.
You know, so that which tells you we've got a lot of season left and a lot of upsets a lot of things are going to happen between now and the end of the year, and the people that are that have their four teams picked already, it's not going to look anything like that if history tells us what's going to happen.
So what he's telling you is be a history major in college. Barry Alvarez all over it. Did you have the Fighting Buffaloes circled? No. Did you have Penn State alive and well? Absolutely not. Do you have Michigan and Ohio State losing except to each other? No. Do you have Clemson losing at home? Not likely. And some of you went out on a limb and said, well, Washington's good. Washington's great. Look what they did to Stanford. And then they get whacked by USC. And by the way, wasn't USC supposed to be on line two calling for Chip Kelly or Coach Herman right now?
Mm-hmm. Wasn't there over under like seven and a half, I think?
They got a ton better.
Switching quarterbacks sure helped.
And they're still a three-loss team.
Yep.
You know, the more I look at it, and you can't jump Colorado over. We'll talk to Barney this week, too, because he's going to be out in La La Land for the Pac-12 championship, Washington, Colorado. But you can't jump Colorado, but Colorado's losses, you lose by 17 to Michigan after your quarterback gets knocked out after being up 24-7. You lose 21-17 to USC. That kind of got USC rolling, again, with your quarterback knocked out. Lufau needs to, you know, stand in there. Sorry. But other than that, that's been the common denominator. The only way they've beaten Colorado, Michigan, and USC is by whacking the quarterback. Conference title, strength of schedule, head-to-head, common opponent. You've got some common opponents here. The 6 degrees of separation, Kevin Bacon game. And I can't, if I'm going to project the numbers tonight, I'm going to go Bama 1, Ohio State 2. I think they're going to move Clemson up to 3. And I think they're going to put Michigan 4. And they'll put Washington 5. Mm-hmm. Or they may position themselves to cover themselves and put Wisconsin in at 5, Washington 4, and they could jump a conference champ with a conference champ. Get your two Big Ten teams in.
Mm-hmm.
And the line's, I think, at -2 right now. I just don't – I know we're not supposed to root, but I don't think James Franklin's a stand-up dude. Maybe if I spent 5 minutes with him in his living room or my living room, I'd change my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's recruited amazing talent. I think he inherited some really good talent from O'Brien. 8 games ago, dude was going to be fired.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's gotten hot.
Mm-hmm.
And you ride that, but McSorley's good. Barkley's great. Godwin's tremendous. Allen Robinson type good. And then their defensive line was sick. It was so good. But are you going to really?
So I tend to think that tonight's going to go Alabama 1, Ohio State 2, Clemson 3, and I think they're going to keep Michigan at the 4 and then put Washington at 5. So in case Washington does win, I think that they can slide them up once they win the Pac-12 championship.
I think the Big Ten will get 2 in even if Clemson wins and Washington wins.
I think Washington's non-con schedule just really
it's awful. And to be honest, they're in conference. The Pac-12's a little bit better than the Big 12, and it's a little bit better than. I mean, it's not better than the SEC, but that's what you're fighting for right now. And you could also smack me argument wise that the Big 12's really probably quite a bit better than the Pac-12 when your champ beat nobody. I mean, who's been on your schedule is what I got to ask. And I don't think Washington can beat Clemson. I don't think Washington can beat Michigan. So maybe they put Michigan 4 and Wisconsin 5 or they just drop Michigan because they're out of it. which I have a problem with. I think Michigan should be it. I think your four best are Bama, Clemson, Michigan, Ohio State. And I think that would rock if you get that New Year's Eve. I don't think there'd be a problem with that at all.
No.
And then you let Wisconsin or Penn State fight Washington in the Rose Bowl. As your, well, sorry, it's an afterthought, but you both have clung to the Rose Bowl with grim death.
Yeah.
Have fun with it.
Yeah.
One, you're left out. Two, sorry, Wisconsin, you won the champ. You're both conference champs, and nobody loves you.
Yeah.
Barry Alvarez right now is he's tied. His hands are tied because he can't be in there for the input because of the Big Ten or because of the Wisconsin factor. You got to recuse yourself eventually. Recruit yourself. Recuse yourself. Interesting. Caller 8 right now. Hail Varsity. 6-month premium online subscription. You'll love it. Inside info, recruiting analysis, a community you want to be a part of with the message boards. Caller 8 now, 466-3776.
Want to be heard?
We know he's not. Let him finish.
Call 402-466-ESPN or text HAIL to 88474 with your message. Chat with us on Twitter at Schmidt_radio and JMoore44 and TJ_Henning.
Who wants to have some fun?
Now it's back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Well, Big Ten awards are out. They've been out. Let's run them down if you're not caught up. Senior safety Nate Gary recognized by the Big Ten coaches and media, all conference teams. Second team selection by the media. Third team by conference coaches. So good for NG out of South Dakota. Awesome player, good senior. Now, honorable mention includes Ross DeZuris, Kevin Maurice, Bando, Chris Jones. And from a return standpoint, you had two Nebraska guys get honorable mention accolades. Drew Brown. Drew was awesome this year, 11 of 13. And DeMornay Pearson L, 7.3 on punt returns. Think if he would have had room. So I've lobbied TJ to crank up some Christmas music for this next giveaway. He reminded me that some are Christmas musicked out already because shortly after the dishes are put in the dishwasher for Thanksgiving, some crank up Christmas music to extreme numbers and levels.
Mm-hmm. I even know some people who do it after Halloween.
You know, I mean, I've got Sinatra on playlist here. For Christmas music, and same yeah. with Dean Martin. You know what's great about this is we are dangerously close to the that time of year when we sit down with Klausburn and we go through the Christmas list.
Mm-hmm.
We got to get that figured out. Okay, well, just stick with the Hallelujah. That's kind of Christmassy, isn't it? Yeah,
for sure.
Okay, caller.
Let's do 6 and 7.
Okay, that means make it short. Caller 6, caller 7. For the holiday Hail Mary, courtesy of ESPN and Hail Varsity, what do you get? Schrock Innovations window. Tablet valued at $499, a Jet Splash car wash certificate, $100 value, and a chance at the remote car starter installed from Auto Sounds, valued at $449. The giveaway for this December 16th. But caller 6 and 7 says TJ right now, courtesy of ESPN and Hail Varsity. Normally, I will give you a chance in the first hour and second hour, but somebody was talking too much and too long. I didn't get my giveaway done in hour one. I feel shame and I'm sorry. But we'll give you a chance now, caller 6, caller 7, to qualify for the holiday Hail Mary. Can we keep the Hallelujah going? Maybe? TJ's like, I'm working here, taking orders. Caller 6 and 7, now with Hail Varsity at ESPN. The Holiday Hail Mary. Schrock Tablet, Jet Splash Car Wash, Auto Sounds Remote Starter. It's getting down super cold across the state of Nebraska, which makes us sad. But the best part of that is that automatic car starter you can win it. So caller 6, caller 7 qualifies for the holiday Hail Mary. Be thankful. A year ago, we're running the BYU Hail Mary as part of this thing. Right? At least they didn't get one of those this year. Taysom Hill's hurt again. That's breaking news. All right, let's kill the hallelujah because that and Radiohead don't go together. TJ Henning's awesome. I'm Chris Schmidt. Thanks for your time. Tomorrow we will talk to you at 4 as Hail Varsity back with you, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Take care.